It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today. Hello, hello, welcome. It is news to me. It is March 16th, 2021, and it's 1900 UTC. How do I know it's 1900? Because I'm recording and having to upload these still. So, that means I know the show starts and ends on time. That's for sure. It is a little after 1 p.m. local time. So, this news is still fresh. Don't worry. It's not frozen. Fresh, never frozen. Anyhow, let's go ahead and start the way we always do. With some world news.
World news.
Alright. So, first up, let's go to the Netherlands. They're easing rules for mail-in ballots as elections continue. The Dutch government on Tuesday said that it would adjust rules for accepting mail-in ballots in an ongoing national election after reports people had made a minor mistake in the procedure. The election, in which Prime Minister Mark Rutte, conservative VVD party, that's Victor Delta party, is expected to gain enough support to secure a fourth term, is running for 3 days, March 15th through the 17th. To allow social distancing room at polling stations. In addition, people 70 years and older were allowed to vote by mail for the first time. An estimated 6% of voters cast a ballot in person on the 15th, with the lion's share expected to vote in person on the 17th. Mail-in votes have already been received, but will not be tallied until the 17th, with roughly a third of eligible seniors expected to vote by mail. After reports of mistakes, Interior Affairs Minister Kasia Ollongren said in a letter to Parliament on Tuesday that ballots from voters who had included their voting pass in an inner envelope rather than outside it in the second envelope as instructed would be counted anyway. Five polls released this week showed Rutte's conservative VVD taking 21-26% of the vote, compared to 11-16% for its closest rival, Geert Wilders' Anti-Islam Freedom Party, which definitely sounds, just sounds terrible. That someone's whole political party would be based against a religion. Anyway, a member of Rutte's current coalition, the pro-European D66 or Delta 66 party, has polled level with the Freedom in recent polls. With the ban on public gatherings, the election campaign focused on a series of televised debates in which Rutte maintained his image as a steady hand during a time of crisis. So we'll see how that goes. Of course, it wouldn't be news to me if we didn't have some sad news, so don't worry, it's going to keep getting worse as we go. You can indeed hug your children with nuclear arms. At least, that's what they say in Britain. Kidding. But Britain will grow its nuclear warhead stockpile by more than 40% to ensure its security in a more risky global environment, and as it faces new technological threats, Prime Minister Boris Johnson said on Tuesday. The country had previously been reducing its nuclear weapons stockpile, and in 2010, the government set a cap of 180 warheads for the mid-2020 period. Johnson scrapped the earlier limit and said the number would now rise to a maximum of 260. In its security and defense review, Britain said it faces risks from nuclear-armed states, emerging nuclear states, and state-sponsored nuclear terrorism, and its nuclear deterrent was needed to guarantee its security and that of its allies. Some states are now significantly increasing and diversifying their nuclear arsenals. The increase in global competition, challenges to the international order, and proliferation of potentially disruptive technologies all pose a threat to strategic stability. The move was criticized by the Elders, a group of former global policymakers who campaigned for peace. So yeah, it's I don't know. It seems like the nuclear deterrent is mostly talk by now. It's, come on. So many people have nuclear weapons and mutually assured destruction. It's like everybody's, anyway, I think that, we could use that, nuclear material for nuclear power plants. Come on, convert it to energy. Stop with all that silliness. Anyway, make peace, not war, make love, not war, all that stuff. All right. And so here's good stuff for you, or a nice thing. A blessing from God. Iraqi truffle hunters unearthed desert harvest. So Here it is, the truffle, a blessing from God. Zahra Buhir carefully digs out a desert truffle from the sandy earth and shows it off between her calloused fingers. Rain came, and then thunder, bringing truffles up to the surface, the 72-year-old said. Braving the harsh weather of Iraq's southern desert, as well as left-behind landmines, Buhir and her family of seven have spent weeks hunting for the seasonal truffles that have provided them with an income for generations. Fetching its hunters up to $7 a kilo this year, Iraq's desert truffle is cheaper than its rarer European cousins that can cost hundreds of dollars or more a kilo. But with Iraq's economy in crisis, the local variety are a big help to Buhir and her family. This year the rain came late, and Buhir could only find about a kilo of truffles a day, one-tenth of what she would dig up in a good year. Turning over stones and poking the earth with her bare hands, Buhir's granddaughter, 5-year-old Riyam, accompanied her parents to learn a trade and the desert lifestyle. "When there's no work, truffles are a source of income, and we are happy here," said Riyam's father, Mohsen Farhan, who cherishes the weeks he spends with his family in their tent in the desert. Learning to hunt for truffles these days also involves understanding the desert's dangers. "We're afraid of wolves. There are a lot out here. And there are mines. A while ago, someone died. Remnants from the Gulf War in 1991, unexploded devices beneath the earth, could be mistaken for truffles by the inexperienced eye." Every few days, Hussein Abu Ali drives into the desert from the city of Samarra to take the truffles to market. There, Ali Taj al-Din sells them at auction, each with a different name according to size. "There's walnuts, eggs, oranges, and here's the pomegranate, the biggest one," he said. Serious scarcity has pushed up prices, and truffles that don't sell locally are exported to wealthier Gulf countries. So, "We fry or grill them, but the favorite dish is truffles on rice," said restaurant owner Fawaz Hatab. So that's great news, I think. It seems like local economies, it's really lame that landmines were left behind. I thought that we had moved past that back in the 70s, but guess I was wrong. Way to go. USA, all the way. Now, this is a troubling story, so if you're sensitive or you just don't like violent or particularly sad news, this is your warning. You might want to fast forward a little ways. So, or I guess you can't fast forward. You might want to turn the radio down for a minute. So this comes to us from Mozambique. Militants. Oh, there we go. Militants are beheading children as young as 11. Children as young as 11 are being beheaded in Mozambique. UK-based aid group Save the Children said on Tuesday as part of an Islamic insurgency that has killed thousands and forced many magnitudes more from their homes. Save the Children said it had spoken to displaced families who described horrifying scenes of murder, including mothers whose young sons were killed. In one case, the woman hid helpless, while her three other children, as her 12-year-old was murdered nearby. "We tried to escape to the woods, but then they took my eldest son and beheaded him," the 28-year-old, who Save the Children called Elsa, is quoted as saying. "We couldn't do anything because we would be killed too." Another mother, a 29-year-old Save the Children calls Amelia, said her son was just 11 when he was killed by armed men. Reuters could not immediately reach Mozambique police or government spokespeople for comment. Mozambique's northernmost province of Cabo Delgado has since 2017 been home to a festering insurgency linked to Islamic State that has escalated dramatically in the past year. While beheadings have always been a hallmark of the attacks, throughout 2020, the insurgents began regularly engaging the military to capture and hold key towns. Brutality also continued with mass killings, including the murder of around 52 people at once in the village of Shanchi in April. It's X-I-T-A-X-I. So it's X-Ray India Tango Alpha X-Ray India. So I'm not sure if it's Xi Taxi or Xi Taxi. I'm not sure. So anyway, this is very sad news indeed. Amnesty International found earlier in March that war crimes were being committed by all sides in the conflict, with government forces also responsible for abuses against civilians. Chance Briggs, Save the Children's country director in Mozambique, said reports of attacks on children sicken us to our core. Well, a big surprise. The children's charity is sickened by kids being attacked and beheaded. Anyway, okay, you can come back now. Unplug your ears, all that jazz. We are approaching 10 minutes into the show, and so I always like to thank SDF for powering it on radio, and be sure and mention that, stick around, the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe is happening at 19:30 UTC every single day. Time change or not, UTC is always the same, because UTC is not a time zone. bam. So that's just something to let you know about. So let's keep going. We've got just a few more, let's see, one, two, three, about four more international stories. And then we're going to let this little Hear the Music guy out of his box, because jeepers creepers, it always happens. It's like you hear it and you're just like, okay, well, I guess that's what's happening right now.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
All right, let's keep going. So this one is more gross than sad, but it is very sad. It's a little disturbing. A South African headmaster has been suspended over accusations he forced an 11-year-old boy to dig for a missing phone in a feces-filled pit latrine. He is alleged to have lowered the child by a rope into the hole used for a toilet, promising 200 rand, which is about $14 US or 10 pounds. The boy's grandmother says he now fears going to school as other pupils mocked him afterwards. The local education body told Times Live it learned of the matter with shame. Pit latrines are common in South Africa, where it was estimated last year that a sixth of all schools still use them. A top education official from the Eastern Cape, Fundelgade, told reporters the incident was beyond disgrace, and he would be visiting the pupil's home to apologize himself. The head teacher in question of Luthulu Junior Secondary School, is now being investigated by the Eastern Cape Department, pending further action. It is alleged he also encouraged other children to help retrieve the phone, which is understood to have been accidentally dropped into the staff pit toilet at the beginning of March. And the school name is L-U-T-H-U-T-H-U, so I think that's Lututu. So, local media say the alleged incident came to light when a local NGO that works to promote school attendance heard about the incident. Petrus Majola from Kulua Community Development Project posted a video that had gone viral describing the incident in Xhosa, saying the hunt for the phone went on for an hour. After students had used buckets to remove some of the waste, Mr. Majola is quoted as saying that the boy was then lowered in until he was knee-deep in the feces. He used his own hands to search for the phone, with feces going even above his hands into his elbow. Ugh. The boy's grandmother, who's not been named, told local media that her grandson felt ashamed after his ordeal. In 2018, government pledged to get rid of all pit latrines in state schools within 2 years after a 5-year-old pupil drowned in one. That's an awful way to go. All right, well, that kind of does it for that story. Really sad, pretty disturbing. North Korea is warning the U.S. to avoid causing a stink if it wants peace. Kim Jong-un, the powerful sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, has threatened to scrap inter-Korean cooperation as she condemned ongoing military drills between South Korea and the United States and cautioned the U.S. causing a stink if it wants peace. The statement comes a day before America's top diplomat and defense chief, who are currently in Japan, are scheduled to arrive in Seoul. We take this opportunity to warn the new U.S. administration trying hard to give off powder smell in our land, Kim said in a statement carried by news agency KCNA. If it wants to sleep in peace for coming 4 years, it had better refrain from causing a stink at its first step. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin are expected to focus on foreign and security policy during their time in Northeast Asia. The timing of Kim's comments, the first direct address to the new U.S. administration since Biden took office, seems designed to ensure that North Korea will be at the top of Blinken and Austin's agenda when they land in Seoul, said Ramon Pacheco Pardo, a Korean expert at King's College London. So, we'll see what happens there. But anytime Korea or North Korea is in the news, is it DPKR or Democratic People's DPRK? DPRK. Anytime the Democratic People's Republic of Korea is involved, it's always a bit of an interesting mix. And I think I'm going to start calling it the DPRK because I think that's their right name, right? Democratic People's Republic of Korea. North Korea, I think, is an American assigned thing. I don't like it. Oh, man. And here's our last story before we play some music. Mass funerals. Oh, boy. Mass funerals held as Myanmar coup death toll revised up to 149. At least 149 people have been killed in Myanmar since the February 1st coup, including 5 in custody, a UN human rights official has said, as mass funerals were held for dozens of those shot dead by security forces in recent days. The revised estimate of the death toll follows the bloodiest day in the 6 weeks since the military takeover, with 74 protesters killed on Sunday, followed by 20 people the next day. Mass funerals were held across Yangon on Tuesday, with hundreds of mourners gathering in different townships to say goodbye to those killed. A crematorium in Yangon reported 31 funerals. A mourner at one of the ceremonies said, "Hundreds of people spilled out onto the street at the farewell for medical student Kent Yar Hien, who had been killed in Yangon on Sunday. Let them kill me right now. Let them kill me instead of my son, because I can't take it anymore," the student's mother was seen saying in a video clip posted on Facebook. Mourners chanted, "Our revolution must prevail." Some families told media the security forces had seized the bodies of loved ones, but they still would hold a funeral. So it's just really awful stuff. Aung San Suu Kyi, 75, has been detained since the coup and faces various charges, including illegally importing walkie-talkie radios and infringing on coronavirus protocols. Sunday's arson attacks on 32 Chinese-invested factories in a Yangon industrial district prompted China's strongest comments yet on the turmoil. It urged the military to stop the violence, punish perpetrators, and protect its people. So that's still not quite clear whether China is for or against this coup, but I think the protesters have the right idea. Get them in the pockets, and hopefully they'll figure out or they'll stop and they'll win. Anyway, let's go ahead and play a song real quick. That way, we'll have a nice smooth transition. Here we go. Okay, so this is Thundercat, and I believe this song is going to be called Captain Stupido. And Thundercat's really cool. Definitely check him out. All right, here we go.
Just take the wheel.
Yes, that was Thundercat. All right, so welcome back. We have a little, about 12, 11 minutes to go. So it's time to talk about some domestic news and some tech news and just kind of round out the show. I do want to thank SDF for powering it on radio. You're listening to Non Radio at nonradio.net. You can see the schedule, sign up to be a DJ, all sorts of stuff right there on the website. You can also listen to the archives, which I find to be very helpful because sometimes I fall asleep or forget about a show. You can just go back into the archives and listen, and it's pretty fun. Also, if somebody forgets their show or doesn't make it to the broadcast booth in time, the auto replay will replay a random archive show. So there you go. That's kind of that. Stick around till 19:30 UTC, and that's when the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe is going to be on. So definitely stick around. Enjoy the show. Enjoy the time you're here with us. All right. So let's go ahead and get on into this. Oh, we got a scrap here, so I'm going to include this real quick. Families in Asia's financial hub of Hong Kong are suffering isolation and trauma after strict coronavirus rules have led to babies being separated from parents and those with newborns herded into tiny quarantine quarters for up to 14 days. Hong Kong authorities have ordered that anyone testing positive for the virus must go to hospital, including babies, while all their close contacts, even those who test negative, are sent to makeshift quarantine camps. "It's crazy," said one mother, who said she had to abruptly stop breastfeeding following separation from her 7-month-old son last week after she was diagnosed with COVID-19. I got fever last night because I've gone from breastfeeding to 100% pumping, said the woman, who asked not to be identified. So instead of dealing with COVID, I'm dealing with blocked, sore breasts. The separation of families over the virus is not common in other developed cities. Hong Kong's government told Reuters late on Monday that for COVID-19 cases involving children, the public hospital will, under special circumstances, decide whether or not their parents can stay with the children in hospital. Family members living with the case will be treated as close contacts and admitted to quarantine center, subject to case-by-case assessments. Shahana Hok Ali, a scientist who moderates the Hong Kong Quarantine Support Group on Facebook, said it had assisted in more than 100 cases of children who'd faced separation from their parents over the past year, with dozens in the past week. So, it's very triggering to think about. I'm sure a lot of parents think that that's really cruel or pretty scary. It's an absolute nightmare. It's such a mess, said a man who saw it in anonymity. On Sunday, a class of 35 9-year-olds from the city's Harbor School were told they needed to enter quarantine. Parents in the school have strongly requested for alternative arrangements that are more humane with regards to the treatment of young children. Legal experts said there were no set guidelines regarding family separations, with each case being handled individually. So, very troubling, pretty scary if you're a kid, but yeah, so that's going on in China. So, I normally don't do a lot of big Hollywood news or news like that, but I did want to mention that Yaphet Kotto, a pretty awesome actor, has passed away. He played a Bond villain in 1973's Live and Let Die. He was in Alien, and he was on a TV show called Homicide: Life of the Street. The thing that I remember him for, though, is I really am a big Gary Busey fan, and Yaphet Kotto was in a movie with Gary Busey, and hold on, I will pull up the name real quick, because I believe it was Eye of the Tiger, but I want to be 100% correct. He was in Eye of the Tiger, one of the really fun Gary Busey movies. So anyway, in Eye of the Tiger, he's going to retire, and he's a retiring cop, and he owns an airplane. So somehow a cop in a small town makes enough money to own a farm and an airplane, and then he bypasses his, he gives up on his retirement by flying the airplane and dropping grenades on the biker gang that kidnapped Gary Busey's daughter. So, anyway, it's choice. It's very fun. You can get it on DVD on Amazon or on eBay or wherever. It came out in 1986. Anyway, so RIP. All right, let's go. Now it's time to talk about the U.S. stuff. And it's good because we only got like 7 minutes to go. All right, so first up, the Iditarod. You've heard of it. It's an annual dog sled race that happens up in Alaska. Well, for the 49th year, this has come to us from The Independent, for the 49th year, the world-renowned Iditarod Trail sled dog race has taken place in Alaska. The winner, Dallas Seavey, crossed the finish line in the early hours of Monday as the second person ever to win the race 5 times. It's a big deal, he said, after completing the merciless competition in 7 days, 14 hours, 8 minutes, and 57 seconds. COVID-19 didn't prevent the Iditarod from starting on March 7th with 46 competitors, known as mushers. However, the trail was shortened from 1,000 miles to 850 miles. Competitors were rerouted around most rural villages, which normally serve as checkpoints, leaving competitors to sleep in tent camps and temperatures that dropped to minus 48 degrees C. We reinvented everything we do, Iditarod CEO Rob Urbach tells The Independent. Most of the major dog sled events have been canceled around the world, but we had a robust testing protocol, which we spent several months planning and pressure testing. Mushers set off from Willow, traveling to the ghost town of Iditarod, and then looping back to finish in the town. While 46 competitors started, 9 dropped out. So the headline mentioned climate change, so I'm trying to find out where the climate change part is. This article is really long. Okay, here it is. In the long run, climate change is likely to dramatically change the Iditarod route, and if the competition is forced to move further north to find more suitable conditions, then an existential question arises. Is it still the Iditarod? That's one we bandy about here in Alaska, Thomas says. In coming decades, there won't be enough snow south of the Alaskan mountain range. If the Iditarod start permanently moving to the interior, north of the Alaska range, then that's really a different race. With the trends we're seeing, spring has the second most warming after winter. In 20 years, we're likely to see that conditions just won't support mushing out of willow in March. While overall trends point to increasingly warm winters in Alaska, conditions still vary widely year to year. So, there we go. This is mostly a fluff piece, and I got fooled by a headline. But the last couple paragraphs do mention that, hey, the Iditarod's running out of snow. All right. Employers with large on-site workforces can set up COVID-19 vaccine clinics, say the CDC. U.S. employers with a large workforce and locations that have enough space to maintain distancing can consider setting up temporary vaccination clinics at the workplace, the CDC said on Tuesday. The initial supply of COVID-19 vaccines is currently recommended for healthcare workers and long-term care facility residents, with frontline essential workers and people 75 years and older next in line. Employers with a sizable workforce on site, predictable schedules, and ability to sign up as a vaccination provider should consider mobile or temporary vaccine clinics, the CDC said. So, hey, if you've got a job, your job might be able to give you the shot. I personally really hate it whenever healthcare and your job overlap like that, though. All right. Top Senate Republican warns a scorched earth response if Democrats dump filibuster. This is a political story. I normally don't like them, but figured this was interesting and worthwhile. U.S. Senator Minority Leader Mitch McConnell warned Democrats on Tuesday that doing away with the chamber's filibuster rule would lead to a completely scorched earth Senate in which Democratic President Joe Biden would have a much harder time moving his agenda. Democrats, who narrowly control the Senate in recent weeks, have voiced more support for the idea of eliminating the custom that requires 60 votes to pass most legislation. They have said the move may be necessary to pass measures, including a House of Representatives bill intended to make it easier to vote and other priorities of the President Biden. This chaos would not open up an express lane to liberal change. It would not open up an express lane for the Biden presidency to speed into the history books. The Senate would be more like a 100-car pileup, nothing moving, McConnell, a Kentucky Republican, said on the floor. Nobody serving in this chamber can even begin to imagine what a completely scorched earth Senate would look like. So, we'll see if he's right or not, because the Democrats... Anyway, politics is crazy, so we'll see. Things will continue to devolve, I'm sure. Oh, man, we've only got just a few more minutes, a little under 2 minutes, a minute and a half. So, this environmental story I thought was really poignant because I've been looking at moving to live off-grid, and what do you know? The Guardian has natural but deadly, huge gaps in U.S. rules for wood stove smoke exposed. Fairbanks has some of the dirtiest air in the country, in large part due to smoke from wood stoves. Wood smoke is a serious health threat, emits high levels of fine particle pollution that can be inhaled, exacerbating respiratory problems like asthma, increasing the risk of premature death from heart attack and stroke. In 2015, the U.S. government required that newer models of wood stoves perform better and began spending millions of dollars to subsidize the transition from older models. Now an investigation by state environmental officials is revealing a critical flaw in the plan. The latest stoves might not be any less polluting than the previous ones. A review of 250 wood-burning stove certifications found unexplained data omissions and atypical lab practices. When the officials retested about a dozen of the heaters in their own labs, they weren't able to verify results. And I would mention here, I skipped this part, but this is probably the part that really got in my head. The trouble is, about 12,000 much larger Fairbank area homes heat with wood too. The city is ringed by hills, so smoke can get trapped in low-lying neighborhoods for days or weeks. So, anyway, it just really surprised me that they've got air pollution problems because everybody uses wood to burn to heat their house. And our friends at the World Socialist website have an interesting piece kind of calling into question the union drive going on at Amazon in Alabama. It's not very long of a read, but basically what they're alleging is that because there aren't any worker demands, this seems like a top-heavy drive from someone else. So check it out. It's kind of interesting. All right, bye. Thanks for listening.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Seven.